Adult-oriented material on the web has been a source of concern for many parents. Over the past few years, software companies have been offering programs that promise to screen out pornography and other kinds of offensive material. But as our linguist Jeff Nunberg points out, it's not quite that simple.
Schools and libraries under pressure to block young people's access to pornographic or racist sites, businesses concerned about employees surfing, parents worried about what their children might run into on the web, they've all been installing the content filtering programs that go by names like Cyber Sitter, Cyber Patrol, Net Nanny, and Surf Watch, what some people refer to as censorware. It's already a $100 million industry, and it'll grow even faster if Congress adopts any of the various bills that require the installation of the software in all schools and libraries that are receiving certain federal subsidies. The only problem is that the programs don't deliver. They all work in more or less the same way. They start by hand-compiling a list of sites that contain pornography or other offensive content, then add additional filters to block sites that contain certain keywords and phrases. But most of the programs turn out to have been deliberately blocking a lot of sites that have nothing to do with pornography or violence. Feminist and gay discussion groups, safe sex information, the homepage of the National Organization for Women, probably because it has links to gay and lesbian sites. In short, they try to rule out anything that any customer might find objectionable. What's more, those filters that are supposed to automatically spot objectionable content turn out to be wildly inaccurate. Not long ago, one anti-censorship group published a list of the first 50 URLs in the EDU domain that were blocked by the censorware program iGear. It turned out that fully 76% of these pages were errors or misclassifications. The blocked pages included a diagram of a milk pasteurization system, a couple of sections of Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and some Latin passages from St. Augustine's Confessions. When I looked at those, they turned out to come from the section where Augustine complains that he still has impure thoughts, but I have the feeling that wasn't why the program blocked them. Probably it had more to do with the fact that the passages contained the Latin preposition cum, as in cum laude. And other systems have blocked sites as innocuous as the home pages of the British Conservative Party and Beaver College in Pennsylvania, not to mention the text of that well-known pornographic classic, Jane Eyre. Some people might say that this is just the price we have to pay for blocking the truly offensive sites, but it turns out that the systems aren't foolproof there either. The software makers like to claim that they can block anywhere from 90 to 97% of the objectionable content on the web, whatever they mean by that. But even if the systems could block 99% of the explicitly pornographic sites, you might have qualms about leaving a child alone with them. At a best estimate, there are more than 100,000 porn sites on the web, and even the most efficient filtering system would leave thousands of them available. And bear in mind that a single porn site isn't like a handgun or a gram of cocaine. Just one can serve an indefinitely large number of users. In the end, the effect would be like reducing the number of available TV channels from 100 to 3. You might limit the variety of the content, but you wouldn't necessarily reduce the size of the audience. When it comes to the crunch, putting a content filtering system in a library is like putting a metal detector at the airport that lets through 5% of the guns and beeps at half the wooden hangers that people have in their suitcases. None of this should be surprising. Censorware programs are like every other kind of software that tries to deal with human language in a natural way. Systems for automatic translation, for example, or search engines that promise to understand ordinary English questions. These systems have their uses, but they can never approach our own language capacities simply because human language is too complicated to be reduced to the kind of rules that a computer can deal with, at least at the present stage of the technology. And if computers have trouble rendering a simple sentence from English to French or understanding a simple question like, where is Joey Buttafuoco from, why would anybody suppose that we can count on them to recognize the much more subtle distinctions between pornography and useful information? How have the makers of censorware programs been able to gull the public about the capacities of the systems? In part, it's because the software houses don't ever make public the lists of sites that the programs block, so that their customers are kept in the dark about just how badly they perform. But mostly, it's just a kind of wishful thinking that's endemic with new technologies. We want to believe that we can rely on the technology itself to provide magic bullets for all the social problems it gives rise to. And of course, the software provides an easy out for administrators and politicians who want to be able to say that they're doing something about the problem. The makers of the software insist that they're not in the business of censorship. After all, they're private firms, not government organizations. But when schools and public libraries are required to install the programs, it's hard to think what other term you would use. Still, there is a difference between the new censorship and the old. We're no longer at the mercy of repressive autocrats who decide what we can read. Now we leave the decision to dim-witted software code. That's a change, but I don't know if I'd call it progress.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.